through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Happy Wednesday. Me and Tom Wassel today. Jake taking a little bi-week vacation with the family. I'm sure he's listening, loving everything he's hearing. You know, Tom, I thought we're sitting here on a bye week. We've got some time to look back. I know it's only been 5 weeks, but I think that's enough to give a pretty honest evaluation of the progress of a couple groups. We're going to look at some position groups later in the day, but I figured we would start by checking in specifically on the Seahawks 2020 rookie class.
Rookies.
I know. We're talking rookies. That's not an actual.
Should be seen and not heard.
Well, it's interesting you say that because Mike Salk, who joins us every single day at 12:30, he'll be coming up next with us at 12:30. He thinks that if a rookie, you know, doesn't make a huge impact, it's fine. Like if a rookie does something great, all the better, but you're not really expecting it. I actually disagree. I think that if you use a first round pick on someone, whether it's pick number one, whether it's pick 32, the expectation is you're going to have some kind of contribution in his rookie season. Now, it's not going to be the same expectation, right? We don't have the same expectations for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is 32, as we do for, you know, Chase Young. But I certainly, you know, would expect from a first round pick that he contribute. The problem for Seattle is their first two picks are injured, and one of them, Daryl Taylor, has not actually played a down for this team because he's been on the NFI list. Now, I don't think this is an end of the world worry situation, but I thought it would be a good time to just go over, figure out who's contributing, who's surpassing expectations, who we want to see more from, and whether or not either of us are concerned about any of these guys. So let's go ahead and start from the top. Linebacker Jordan Brooks, your first overall pick. He is injured, but he's on the active roster. You know, he's made some contributions. You know, with Bruce Irvin out, he was going to be more of a factor. Unfortunately for him, he did suffer that knee injury, but he's expected to return. So I hit the pause button on him so far, Tom. With defensive end Daryl Taylor, he is injured and started the season on the NFI list. So let's go ahead and get started here. Does that concern you at all?
Well, yeah. First of all, I graded that draft an A minus, I think. And that was just, you know, a matter of, okay, what kind of positions did they go after? Where did they pick them? The trades they made, et cetera. So I'll still stand by that grade. But, you know, the guys at the top, I think, I mean, like you, I expected them to contribute as well. Now, there's for a guy like Jordan Brooks, who's a linebacker, there's less urgency for him to contribute as opposed to Daryl Taylor, a position that they definitely needed and still do, by the way. I think when you look at the total amount of guys that they drafted, it's not a question of how many guys are contributing so much as whether or not certain guys do, right? The guys at the positions that they need to make an impact. Are they?
Well, I don't even think like it's the positions they need, though. I think that even though you don't need a middle linebacker, which is where Jordan Brooks played in his final season at Texas Tech, you don't need a middle linebacker right now. But if you're it's your first round pick, you want contributions in his rookie season. So
yeah,
like
we're talking. Well, wait, why?
Because you used a first round pick. And I know that I know John Schneider tried to trade back with Green Bay and that ended up not working out because they were able to make a trade that got them in a better position. So I know that they had to pick no matter what, but it was between Jordan Brooks and Daryl Taylor, who they almost used a first round pick on. Why would you not expect contributions from a first round pick?
Well, what if you picked a quarterback in the first round? Like, who was it? Did Green Bay do that?
Jordan Love. Well, why would you do that if you're Seattle, though? If you're picking a quarterback in the first round early, I would absolutely expect contributions or some kind of thing. I'm talking about you picked a guy. Your biggest needs were on defense. You needed speed. Whether or not you needed a middle linebacker, you needed speed. You used a first round pick on someone.
But how could you expect him to contribute if he's behind guy? I mean, I know he's hurt, but
they didn't say
how could you expect
he'd play behind Bobby Wagner. The idea was, like, we can use him anywhere. He He's played outside and inside.
Okay, well, I just don't look at Jordan Brooks as a guy that needs to make an impact in the first 5 weeks of this season just because they're pretty strong at that position. I mean, KJ Wright's playing out of his mind. I'm talking linebackers, not just, you know, individual spots. And Bobby Wagner is what he is. So there's time on that one, as there was with, kind of with Rashad Penny because he's behind Carson. But with a guy like Darrell Taylor, his health is a much bigger issue because they're short at that position, right? They need a guy who can rush the passer. So that's a bit of an issue. It doesn't make the draft pick a bad one.
No. Unless, I think it's too early to call any of these draft picks bad.
Yeah, sure. I agree. I mean, I still give it an A-. But there's, I'll look at Darrell Taylor, Alton Robinson, and Damian Lewis. Those are the guys that I think they needed to contribute immediately just because of the positions that they play. And two of those three guys are playing well or have shown signs that they at least belong on the field. Damian Lewis is fine. Alton Robinson may not have had a huge impact yet. I mean, he has on certain plays, but he's shown flashes that he, A, belongs on the field, and B, has the potential to develop over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. That's a really good sign for the team. For the rest of the guys, I mean, you could kind of take or leave their impact for now only because they're not totally necessary. Like Freddie Swain's impact, which has been notable, is kind of a bonus. Not totally necessary, but it's a bonus. Like, oh, okay, we got another nice wide receiver here. That's good to know, and good that we know that we can go to him and Russell trusts him. That's totally cool. But, Cody Parkinson, DJ Dallas, Sullivan, going into every draft that two or three guys aren't going to have NFL careers. That's just the way it works. If all seven of them do, then you've had an unbelievably successful draft. That doesn't usually happen with any team. So for the guys that haven't contributed, Brooks and Taylor notwithstanding because they're hurt, I think I'm fine with how it's turned out so far. And I think that, like you, there should be an impact from your rookie class in their first year in some sense. It'll vary, but I think that they're in pretty good shape.
I think the thing with Darrell Taylor, again, I think this team is really high on Darrell Taylor, who they almost selected in the first round. They liked him that much, ended up going with Brooks, and then were surprised, John Schneider said this, surprised that they were still able to get Darrell Taylor in the second. I think that the fact that he's playing at a position where you needed the most help, you knew you needed help, and you ended up taking two defensive ends in this draft because of that, I don't know that Pete Carroll and John Schneider expected him to be injured this long and expected him to miss time in the season. I think that's where I get a little uneasy. I'm going to preface this by saying that I think Darrell Taylor has a ton of potential with this team. This isn't saying the pick is a mistake. It's more saying I am someone who places more weight on higher draft picks as far as expectations go. And I know that for you, you look at the total number of picks and you say, if four of seven guys contribute, that's really good. I think for me, I look at it as a second round pick could have been two more picks or two more players. You could have had more bites at the apple. So do I think that Darrell Taylor was a mistake? Absolutely not. It is way too early to say that. Again, he seems like a guy they could really use, but that's exactly the problem. Like, I'm a little nervous that he started the season on the NFI list.
Well, okay. Then, and I don't want to deviate from the conversation about this year's rookies, but are you ready to join me in the black hole?
I'm scared.
Of Rashad Penny is a bust?
No, absolutely. Tom.
Why not?
Because I don't want to be there.
Well, I don't want to be there either. I'm stuck there.
I think that there are some fans that have a little bit of PTSD with early round picks. And that's why they were so quick to jump on the, LJ Collier is a bust bandwagon. That was after 1 year where LJ Collier almost suffered a season-ending injury. It was way too soon to say he was a bust. But I think a lot of fans were doing it because they were like, oh, Malik McDowell, that didn't work out. Oh, Rashad Penny, he's injured. And Chris Carson ended up being your lead back. Oh, now LJ Collier is not contributing. I think that there's a little bit of like this like PTSD that fans have with early picks for this team.
I get it. And you know what? It's unfair to judge each one of those players based on the prior performances or lack thereof from the other, from like earlier draft picks that haven't worked out. Like, I can't look at Rashad Penny and say he's worse than he is because of what happened with Malik McDowell. You know, both guys, I mean, Malik McDowell wasn't a first rounder, but he was drafted first that year by the Seahawks. I mean, that's probably not fair, but you did say that you expect performance, if I have your meaning right.
Yeah.
You expect performance in your first year
because of the opportunity that is there. Like, normally you would draft for a position of need. That's why people were surprised that Seattle went with a linebacker. But, again, they almost went with a defensive end. In my mind, the battle at that Leo spot where Daryl Taylor is going to play was wide open. Even though they brought in Benson Mayoa, and even though, you know, they had guys there already, if you were to come in and blow everyone away, like, you're starting there.
Yeah. Agreed. I mean, it's still a position of need as of right now. I mean, let me ask you this question. Do you feel better right now about the defensive line in general than you did over the summer?
Not necessarily based on their performance, but about the guys they have there, yes. Like, I guess yes. So overall, yes. It's not by a significant margin, but I think Benson Mayoa has been good. I think Jaron Reed is coming off a great game, and I think there's some room for improvement there for sure. In a way that I think
feel
they
better
can
too.
Reach it.
Yeah, I definitely. And by the way, at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk about each position group and which ones are going to get better, which ones are going to stay the same, and which ones could actually get a little bit worse. And that defensive line, I mean, I agree. I think that I'm more confident in them now than I was over the summer, despite the fact that they just got run all over by two running backs the other night. But I think that there are signs. I mean, Jaron Reed did have a good game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alton Robinson, even for a rookie. Now, remember, he's a 6th-round pick. He's not a first or second rounder, so the expectation there is a little bit less. I'd say that based on what he has done for a 6th-round pick, first 5 weeks of his career, thumbs up. Just showing that you belong on an NFL field and that there's reason for optimism going forward, mm-hmm. I think is more than enough. Now, they may need him more than that, but just him in a vacuum, evaluating him, I think I'm good with him. Like, I give him,
yeah.
You know, thumbs up, buddy. You're doing fine.
Yeah, I think of the play from the guys we've seen. So Damian Lewis, who's been fantastic, by the way, 5 starts. I know he had limited snaps in week 3 when he got injured after pretty much the first drive. But he's otherwise played 100% of snaps in weeks 1, 2, and 5. Pro Football Focus says he's only allowed 1 sack, committed 5 penalties, and has an overall grade of 75.7, which is great. He is better at run blocking versus pass protection, but I'll accept that. From a rookie right guard, I'm fine with that right now, especially since the pass protection overall as a unit has improved, particularly with help from your 2 tackles, Dwayne Brown and Brandon Shell there. I think that Damian Lewis has been your most productive rookie from this group so far. But the other 3 guys that have played, DJ Dallas, Alton Robinson, Freddie Swain. I know DJ Dallas had pretty limited snaps, but I think that all of those guys have shown glimpses of a kind of potential that you can imagine this team saw when they took them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? We're going to talk to Brock Heward at 1. I want to ask him this question. When you're evaluating rookies in general, like, what's the one thing you want to know from them? I would imagine that one of those things would be to answer the question, does he get it? Does this rookie get it? You know what I mean? Like, does he carry himself well? Does he shut his mouth and learn? Does he prepare a certain way? Is he picking up the playbook? Things like that. I mean, Damian Lewis seems to get it. Dwayne Brown said that a couple of times over the summer. There are guys in the past who have not. I'm not sure that Marquise Blair got it his first year. I don't know why this name is popping into my head, but do you remember Kevin Norwood, the wide receiver they drafted in like 2014? He was a guy that was supposed to take, I think, Golden Tate's spot and didn't. For a number, he just, whether it was because of, and I remember interviewing him, he seemed like he was kind of absent-minded. But, I mean, does the rookie get it? Has he shown that, all right, it's like when we get a new board op. You know, we've got that, we've got our guy, Tarik.
Tarik, who, by the way, wearing a 49ers hat today, which is a very bold choice.
Okay, see?
Yeah.
If I want to answer the question, does our new board op get it? I'd have some questions about that.
I have questions about his performance.
He's wearing a 49ers hat.
That's all I'm saying. I'm saying that has Tarik met our expectations? I don't know, Tom. You tell me. I don't think
so. It's up in the air.
It's up in the air.
I mean, his taste in music is phenomenal.
Taste
in hats? Better than any board op we've ever had.
Taste in hats.
I mean, he loves like early Genesis, but I mean, the hat, come on. What are you doing?
What are you doing? Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the we got to protect the kids nonsense.
Should another bye week be added to mitigate the frustration of postponed games, etc.? I mean, we heard from, about the Titans, was it the Titans having to practice all week and then they get their
the Broncos.
No, it's the Broncos, excuse me.
Melvin Gordon.
Right, Melvin Gordon, who actually just got arrested for a DUI. The Broncos had to practice all week and then the game gets postponed and they essentially lose their bye week. Should we just add another bye week?
I'm going to say no for right now, which is unfair for teams like Denver that had to essentially have a fake bye week, but also the majority of teams outside of the Steelers kind of getting their schedule messed up, the Chargers a little bit, and certainly the Broncos. Outside of those teams, the rest of the teams have so far been okay, other than very minor changes, but like no one's bye week outside of Denver, I don't think, has been drastically, drastically affected.
It's just unfortunate. I mean, like we said yesterday, there could be some circumstances that seem unfair this year, but everybody's just kind of got to roll with it. As long as everybody remains as healthy as possible, I think that's the best we can hope for.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was going to say, if you start to see more bye weeks being affected, I could see that happening. And I think we were wondering if, you know, with the kind of a delay or cancellation of the Pro Bowl essentially this year, I think we were wondering, like, are they leaving space then for there to be a potential end of season bye for playoff teams or just a late season bye for all teams? I think it's certainly a possibility, but I don't think you need to do it right now.
Number two.
All right, as I said, we're going to talk later on about position groups that can improve. Is there one Seahawk, an individual, you think will improve as the season goes on?
Yes, there are a couple. I think Jaron Reed can continue to take steps forward. I mean, last year, because of a suspension, he joined the season later and had a bit of a delayed start. And I think this year, if he can build on that performance he had last week, especially with this defensive line that really needs great performances from these guys, I think that's promising. The fact that he's already been able to do it is helpful, right? It's more encouraging that he's had a season where he had 10 plus sacks, as opposed to being like, oh, can he do more of this in the future? We'll see. Like, we know he can. You know what I mean? So I think that my expectations for Jaron Reed have now increased. I think Quentin Dunbar, being healthier, getting confidence up. I know Jake was the one to point this out, but in Quentin Dunbar's second outing, Jake was like, he just played more confidently. And I think that in another game back, we can see that continue to improve. So I'd say those two guys first and foremost, Quentin Dunbar and Jaron Reed. How about you?
Yeah, well, Dunbar would be the guy that I think I want to improve the most. I mean, again, stay on the field first, but with his play, I'd love to. I think Alton Robinson will improve as his reps increase. He's only played in three games, so it's not like he's appeared in all five and sort of disappeared. But I think that he will definitely get better. This may seem weird because he's played well already, but I actually think that there's room for Chris Carson to be.
I was hoping you'd say Russell
than
Wilson.
He has been. Oh no! Well,
I would like to see more from Russ.
He could get better, though, is
he
the
could,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to, but he could.
Look, I'm not seeing five touchdowns a game anymore. You know what I mean? It's like the bar's really been lowered.
Right. Well, what's his highest passing yardage this year?
Russell Wilson?
I think it. 500 yet?
No, I think it was against Miami.
Okay.
Was it? I'm not sure. I agree with the Chris Carson one. I think the one encouraging thing is that you've still seen production. It's just as opposed to he hasn't had a 100-plus yard rushing performance yet. I think what you've seen is just pretty consistent total yards from scrimmage. He already has one more target than he did in all of 2018. He had 20 catches. He has 21 receptions this year, and he's almost matched that yardage as well. I think he's on pace for the most receptions, most yardage, and most. He's already surpassed most receiving touchdowns so far. So I like the way they're using him. I, too, would just like to see just a really, not a traditional game from him, but in a career year, I'd like to see 100-plus yard rushing performance, too. I think it's something we know he's capable of, and it's kind of one of those things where you're like, you just leave the game feeling like that was an accomplishment.
The kind where he just takes it over, and by the end, nobody wants to tackle him, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which has happened a little bit here and there.
Making some career decisions.
All right, one last one.
Okay.
Number three.
I feel like Tyler Lockett's been quiet lately. Like, maybe Russ has had some trouble getting him the ball. I'm not going to say they're not on the same page, but his numbers over the last two games have been down a little bit. Think that's just circumstance, or you think there's an issue there?
I don't necessarily think there's an issue. There have been games where it's like he's just not being targeted for a while and you're wondering what the case is. As far as my first reaction hearing this question, I know that DK Metcalf leads the team in total yards. He led in targets by quite a bit last week. But I think it's just that Tyler Lockett is a smaller receiver, and smaller receivers, unless you are like Julian Edelman, never get as much attention as big dudes that make big catches. Like, that's just it's NFL highlights, and the things that they look at are guys like DK Metcalf. As a fellow petite, it's offensive. Tyler Lockett is a fantastic receiver who can make insane catches, but yeah, I think DK Metcalf has drawn a ton of national attention and acclaim this year, rightfully so. He is wildly exceeding so many people's expectations of him, even dating back to the draft. But I think Tyler Lockett absolutely still has it. And I think I'd expect to see a bit more from him as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, DK Metcalf's ceiling is so much higher than Tyler Lockett's just because of physical potential. And as a fellow petite, I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah,
I feel for Tyler. But, you know, the last two games, two catches for 39, was only targeted four times, then five times the other night, four for 44, as opposed to, you know, he put up nine for 100, seven for 67, eight for 92, touchdowns, et cetera, you know. I just think the reason why it's important to bring this up, I think, is because Russell is usually at his best when he's distributing the ball all over the place. Mm-hmm. On that final drive, he had to go to Metcalf the other night, fine. But I think usually when he gets a lot of guys involved, that's when he's really at his best.
Tom, I think that especially when Jake is out, because he's not allowed, we should have like a petite appreciation day where we're just like, shout out to these fellow undersized NFL players for your oversized contributions. You know,
just sneak him in there.
Yeah, I think so. All right. If you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Mike Salk joins us next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Stacy Rost and Tom Wassel with you today. wishing a happy vacation to Jake Heaps out with the fam. Mike Salk joins us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, we talked a bit earlier in the show about the Seahawks 2020 rookie class, just doing a little baby check-in. Tom and I disagree a little bit. Overall, we like the contributions from the guys that have contributed. With Tom, he's like, yeah, look, I'm concerned about Daryl Taylor, but I think it's more important that, you know, four of your picks look promising out of all of them. I actually am very concerned that the two who are not included are your top two picks. You don't think rookies need to contribute?
Well, I don't expect them to. I mean, any time that you get contribution from them, I think that's great, and that helps your team be better. So it's not like I don't want them to contribute. I just don't necessarily expect it to be the case, or even more so, I don't count on it. I think any time you're looking at your roster at the beginning of the year and you say, okay, well, our pick from here is going to do this, and this guy, this new guy is going to do that, I think you're taking an enormous risk because you just don't know what to expect from your rookies. Some guys hit the ground running and off they go. We've seen it with DK Metcalf. We saw it this year with Damian Lewis, mm-hmm. right, where they look like they are veterans from the moment they get there. And for those guys, great. You get contribution right away. That's a huge bonus. But if the Seahawks had gone into this season with the assumption and banking on the fact that Damian Lewis was going to be their right guard, and they hadn't made really certain to bring in all the other guys just in case that didn't work out, I think you're doing a disservice to your team. So I'm happy that rookies contribute. I'm a little concerned about how little we're seeing so far from both Jordan Brooks and obviously Daryl Taylor, who's been out since the beginning. Yeah, that's concerning because now you still don't know what to expect next year. And all of a sudden, are you starting to bank on something that's in year two, and you still don't even know whether that's something you can count on? That's really my concern.
Tell me what you think of this idea. At 1 o'clock, we're going to talk to Brock, and I'm going to ask him to officiate our wedding. What do you think?
Are you really? That idea.
Jake is going to be so mad. He already got denied for Curtis's wedding. And now he's getting denied for your
wedding. Wow. There's a lot of thoughts in my head at once here. Are you sure you're prepared for that?
Oh yeah, 100%. By the way, this is Constance's idea.
Oh.
He insisted on it.
I think it's a fantastic idea. I can tell you I have one time officiated a wedding myself, and it feels like an amazing responsibility when you're doing it. Yeah, one of my wife's good friends asked me to officiate her wedding a few years ago.
Is this like a $20 certificate you can buy?
Oh, I don't even think it was
$20. Why is everyone I know ordained?
I don't think it was even $20. It might have even been free.
Universal Life Church on the internet.
So she and her now husband were really big sports fans, and they wanted to flip a coin, do a coin toss to decide who would read their vows first. And so one of my jobs as the officiant was to be essentially the ref at the beginning of a football game.
That's too much pressure.
And flip a coin. Well, so I started thinking, like, well, I don't feel comfortable. Am I going to flip a quarter? Like, I feel like I should do something special for them. So the thing was taking place in Maryland, and I drove all around looking for a nice dollar coin. Well, they don't make the big dollar coins anymore. They only have the little ones, right? So I was looking for like a Sacagawea or like one of the older ones. So all the banks didn't have them. And finally, I went into a pawn shop. They told me they might have some old coins in the pawn shop. So I go in and I found one of the big silver dollars that I thought would be perfect for this. It was in a little commemorative case. And I brought it up to the front desk and I said, hey, how much for this dollar coin? And the guy said, it's $1. And so I gave him a dollar, but then I wasn't sure if he was giving me change for my dollar or if I was buying it. And did I need to pay it like a 5-cent tax? Like, it was a really confusing thing, but I flipped it to them and then they got it. So, yeah, Tom, I think that's a great idea. Having people you know be involved in your wedding that way, I think, is spectacular.
It's a big I'll put Jake second and you third.
What am I, chopped liver?
You don't have the $20 for the certificate.
I can get this figured out. Give me 10 minutes.
No, Stacy, you already agreed to supervise Charlie and Penelope, the dogs, for the day.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Did I?
Maybe I dreamt that.
Let's get back to this draft.
Okay.
This draft, you look at the Seahawks right now, and their draft class is looking like it's once again kind of a problem. I mean, you know, Damian Lewis looks like a nice pick. You can't help but like what he's done so far. Is he going to be an all-pro? I don't know, but he certainly looks like that's a pretty good third-round pick as of right now. Outside of that,
why? Yeah.
Are you looking at anybody right now and saying, I see superstar, I see, you know, a blue chipper in the future? I mean, maybe Alton Robinson turns into something. We'll see. He's done a couple of nice things, but certainly not enough to make me think that. And I know we're only five games in. We're way too early to make any definitive judgments. But I'll admit, when I see Patrick Queen, who was the other linebacker that they were that was sort of right there with Jordan Brooks, he was the one who was the consensus pick ahead of Brooks. He was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week this past week for Baltimore. Meanwhile, Jordan Brooks hasn't done anything yet. Now, I know he's been hurt, and I know you got some different positional issues, and it's not entirely his fault. But if those two guys are forever to be compared to one another right now, today, you have to say that Patrick Queen is looking better. He was just a Defensive Player of the Week while our guy's not doing anything.
They only get you're only allowed a blue chip player like every few years, and they got theirs in DK last year. So I think that, you know, you got
to. When we talked to Daniel Jeremiah before the season started, he said you should be aiming to get one blue chipper a year. And the draft.
You should aim, but you can't.
That's well, ridiculous. But that's
wrong. I know.
He seemed to think that that's like a reasonable thing to do, is sort of one a year. I think the problem is before DK Metcalf, the Seahawks had only had two since 2012. I mean, you had three of them in 2012 alone.
Are you talking about 15 with Frank Clark and Tyler
Frank Clark Lockett? And Tyler Lockett, I think you would both say were blue chip draft picks. And outside of those two, until DK Metcalf finally becomes that
this year.
Ethan
Postick has worked out for you this year. I don't know that
you can't call him a blue chip. He looked like a bust until a few weeks ago. I mean, he looks like a. That's not to say there haven't been players along the way.
No, I see what you're saying. As far as definitively, these are guys that you.
These are guys you're building around. Right. And oh, by the way, they traded away Frank Clark because they didn't want to pay him to build around him. Mm-hmm. So while I think we'd still consider him a blue chip player, it's a little bit iffy. And that's before you take in some of the busts, the Malik McDowells, and some of those guys that just never really did much. They've had a lot of problems drafting since 2012. It's not to say they haven't gotten some good players. They have. But the blue chippers that are going to be the basis of your program, they haven't been able to find those guys. And I'll tell you, look, what the Seahawks are doing at 5-0 is awesome. Russell Wilson's been spectacular. Did you watch Tennessee last night?
Yeah.
Would you like to see what Russell Wilson would look like with that Tennessee roster?
The answer is yes.
I would, too, because I would take the Tennessee roster in general outside of the quarterback position over Seattle's.
The complete roster.
Take out the quarterbacks. I will just give me the other 52 guys on the roster. I'll take Tennessee. It wouldn't even be close. And if you were to give that roster to Russell Wilson and still let him run the ball, pound the rock, give it to Henry, throw when he needs to, win the games, I think you'd be even better than you are right now. And that defense, by the way, looks a whole lot better than Seattle. So, look, I like what Seattle's doing. I like this team. I think they're fun. They're different. They're unique. It's a completely different watch than what we've seen. But I can't help but get a little jealous when I see Tennessee and the kind of physical brand of football that team can play.
Look, we get it, Mike. You are really upset Clowney isn't here. that's ultimately what this is.
I wouldn't mind seeing Jadeveon Clowney here still. That's true.
He's your LeBron. You'll just root for whatever
I saw Bruce Irvin talking smack to him last night,
great.
Saying they both have the same number of sacks.
Bruce Irvin, he's on fire. Twitter, yeah. All right, you can hear Mike on the weekly Brock and Salk podcast. They just dropped a new episode. Go download that now. And you can always hear him every day at 12:30 right here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys.
All right, you guys. Locally, we have thought Russell Wilson's been capable of playing at this level, this MVP level, for a while. But why is it just now getting national recognition? Keyshawn Johnson has a theory. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson leading the conversation for MVP through 5 weeks. Doesn't matter if he didn't throw five touchdowns every week. He's been pretty solid. That includes a 94-yard, I believe, drive late in the fourth quarter to win a game against the Minnesota Vikings and keep Seattle undefeated heading into their bye week. Now, unsurprisingly, there's been plenty of national conversation about Russell Wilson's MVP campaign. You've heard it between play-by-play announcers during random games. I mean, it's everywhere. One person sounding off on this also is Keyshawn Johnson. On his show, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, Johnson in cut number five right here says the Hawks have finally made this Russell Wilson's team.
This team slowly has went more toward him and less toward the defense. And I think as time goes on, as long as he continues to win and he puts 90-yard drives together, which I hope that he's not continuing to do that, although I want him to win, he's going to get the recognition he so deserves. This was a defensive-minded organization and team under Pete Carroll as long as Pete's been there. Now, all of a sudden, the last couple years, it has shifted to an offensive-minded, pass-happy, DK Metcalf, Lockett, Russell Wilson, Olsen-type situation. And now he's going to get the notoriety and attention he so deserves.
Now, Tom, Keyshawn kind of implies here that Russell's lack of national recognition is a byproduct of the Seahawks' run-first approach, which they were doing, by the way, as recently as last year. But in 2018, they passed on just 47% of all plays. That improved to something like 52, 53% last year, up to almost 61% this year, a drastic change even just from 2019 to 2020. Is that run-first approach that Seattle had what was keeping Russell Wilson out of that national recognition and MVP talk, or is it something else?
It's height.
No, I'm not going to lie. Like, I agree with you on this.
You wanted me to sneak in something about height every conversation,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, yes.
That was it. that's probably part of it. But, I mean, I'm trying to think about some other quarterbacks who have had good running games who have been lauded as, you know, being truly elite.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I think it goes more back to what we've talked about before, which is that he just came along at the wrong time. You know, he came along at a time when it was pocket passer this and pocket passer that, and he was more of a runner. And as he became into more of a like a boxed-in traditional quarterback, all of a sudden you get Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and all these other guys. So he's been more out of step with the trends. I think that that's really what's held him back in terms of national perception. But I've tried to figure out, like, why this conversation is important. Like, the MVP thing. Like, why does it matter? It's just really just window dressing. Like, why does it matter? Is there some sort of, like, personal investment that we up here in the Northwest have? Like, it seems superficial, sort of nebulous, like, as a concept that has no bearing on the Seahawks' success. But the MVP issue, I guess, matters to me only because it matters to Russell. Like, if national recognition is something that motivates him, then that's something that I care about. He says he wants to be the best to ever play the position. It'll be interesting if he actually achieves that goal, but if he's going to be that guy, Stacy, he needs to end his career with at least one, if not maybe two MVPs, and probably another Super Bowl win. Maybe not necessarily, but he's got to get one of those two things at least to even be in that conversation. So the MVP thing, it does matter.
I think it absolutely matters. I think as someone who's from the Pacific Northwest, I think that there is a bit of a, I don't want to say a resentment that is tied to this. But I think I attach the MVP conversation as one that is not from the point of view of someone here, but from the point of view of an East Coast audience. That's how it's felt for college. That's how it's felt for the pros, for national recognition, for any big athletes here. When I think of MVP conversations, I don't imagine me or people from, you know, the Northwest necessarily like steering that conversation. When I say MVP conversation, what I say is like national, even the East Coasters are talking about Russell Wilson. So I think that there's this aspect of a location bias that goes into that. And I think that that's why the MVP conversation matters, because it's this kind of like frustration that I think people have up in Seattle, up in Washington, with feeling overlooked, even when they've had stars, superstars here. Of not getting that recognition. I mean, Carson Wentz was part of this conversation. He was never as good as Russell Wilson has been, period. So I think that that's part of it. I think that part of his lack of recognition, though, I understand what Keyshawn Johnson is saying with, hey, Russell Wilson has been part of a run-first offense. I completely understand and agree with what you're saying with, he came in at a time when he was being compared to Andrew Luck and when he was on a team whose stars were all on its defense, plus its running back. I think those are big contributors there. I also think that just like he didn't look or play like the ideal quarterback at the time. He was forever compared to Andrew Luck. It was constantly Andrew Luck is Aaron Rodgers. Andrew Luck is Tom Brady. Andrew Luck can be Peyton Manning. Russell Wilson, maybe he'll be like Michael Vick. There was some kind of like weird race undertones with some of that, but a lot of it too was his height, the fact that he was mobile. And I don't think people thought early on in Russell Wilson's career that he could be the kind of quarterback he is now. I don't think the way Seattle's offense is structured is necessarily the only thing that's been keeping him from that. Because there have been worse quarterbacks on teams that have been on the East Coast that have been part of those conversations. So I think it's a mix of a lot of things. It's a mix of locations, and it's a mix of he is not fitting the mold of what people considered to be a traditional quarterback. Keyshawn Johnson said this himself when he said that Aaron Rodgers was a more pure quarterback. In what way?
Yeah, people want to define you early. And when you brought up the Carson Wentz example there, that MVP caliber year that he had in 2017 when they won the Super Bowl, I mean, the fact that his team was good helped too, but people want to define you from the second you hit the stage. Kind of like we were talking about yesterday, like, I think it's easy to tell when a quarterback belongs, like watching Justin Herbert, he belongs. Baker Mayfield belongs. I thought Johnny Manziel did not belong. Russell Wilson belonged, but because of the style they were playing back then, it's like, okay, we're going to put him in this box. We're going to put Carson Wentz in this box, Lamar Jackson in this box, and Patrick Mahomes in this box. And it's really hard to get out of that box.
Yes.
You know, it always will be. It's not just a football thing. You see that in all walks of life. Like, you know, you put out your first album. It's like, oh, I prefer their early stuff. You know, people who they always say that, like, oh, I like their first album. I don't like any of their other stuff. Why? Because they dared to evolve. Mm-hmm. Like, people always want to just define you and then move on to the next big thing. That's just kind of the way it is. And now we're 8 years into Russ's career. I mean, it's the national media is always going to lag behind in terms of like what the reality is as opposed to what their perspective is. Unfortunately.
Yeah, no, and that's really well said, because that's exactly what it is. And that's not just for Russell Wilson, although I do think that the fact that he is a shorter quarterback played into that a lot, with people being like, well, I don't know, is he going to see over his offensive linemen? How are you going to last? So he was placed in a box. I think there are many other quarterbacks that have been placed into that too. You're totally right with that one. But yeah, I think I get what Keyshawn's saying here, but I don't know. I think that going back to whether or not it actually matters, I know you said the MVP vote matters to you because it seems to matter to Russell Wilson. And so you're like, I get, you know, that it's important because it matters to him. For me, I think it is important because it marks more of a change in the different types of skills that we accept with, I don't want to say a mainstream quarterback, but with a popular top quarterback. It means a lot to me if Russell Wilson gets an MVP award instead of just constantly seeking someone that could be the next Peyton Manning, if that makes sense. So, all right. So Brock Heward is going to join us next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. We want to get back into this conversation about the Seahawks 2020 rookie class. We'll ask him about Keyshawn Johnson's comments. That's all coming up next.